white linen, leather sandals that laced up to the knee, a bronze medallion belt, a leather vest painted with fire-breathing dragons. The Dothraki would respect him more if he looked less like a beggar, she hoped, and perhaps he would forgive her for shaming him that day in the grass. He was still her king, after all, and her brother. They were both blood of the dragon. She was arranging the last of his gifts, a sand-silk cloak, green as grass with a pale grey border that would bring out the silver in his hair, when Viserys arrived, dragging Doria by the arm. Her eye was red where he'd hit her. "How dare you send this whore to give me commands?" he said. He shoved the handmaid roughly to the carpet. The anger took Danny utterly by surprise. "I only wanted... Doria, what did you say?"
"Khaleesi pardons. Forgive me. I went to him as you bid, and told him you commanded him to join you for supper."
"No one commands a dragon," Viserys snarled. "I am your king. I should have sent you back her head." The Lycene girl quailed, but Danny calmed her with a touch. "Don't be afraid. He won't hurt you."
"Sweet brother, please forgive her. The girl misspoke herself. I told her to ask you to sup with me, if it pleases your grace."
She took him by the hand and drew him across the room. "Look, these are for you." Viserys frowned suspiciously. "What is all this?"
"New raiment. I had it made for you." Danny smiled shyly. He looked at her and sneered.
"Dothraki rags! Do you presume to dress me now?"
"Please, you'll be cooler and more comfortable. And I thought, maybe if you dress like them, the Dothraki..." Danny did not know how to say it without waking his dragon.
"Next, you'll want to braid my hair."
"I'd never..." Why was he always so cruel? She had only wanted to help.
"You have no right to a braid. You have won no victories yet."
It was the wrong thing to say.
Fury shone from his lilac eyes, yet he dare not strike her, not with a handmaid watching and the warriors of her cars outside. Viserys picked up the cloak and sniffed at it. "This stinks of manure. Perhaps I shall use it as a horse blanket."
"I had Doria sew it specially for you," she told him, wounded.
"These are garments fit for a carl. I am the Lord of the Seven Kingdoms, not some grass-stained savage with bells in his hair." Viserys spat back at her. He grabbed her arm. "You forget yourself, slut. Do you think that big belly will protect you if you wake the dragon?"
His fingers dug into her arm painfully, and for an instant Danny felt like a child again, quailing in the face of his rage. She reached out with her other hand and grabbed the first thing she touched, the belt she hoped to give him, a heavy chain of ornate bronze medallions. She swung it with all her strength. It caught him full in the face. Viserys let go of her. Blood ran down his cheek where the edge of one of the medallions had sliced it open.
"You are the one who forgets himself," Danny said to him. "Didn't you learn anything that day in the grass? Leave me now, before I summon my cars to drag you out, and pray that Khal Drogo does not hear of this, or he will cut open your belly and feed you your own entrails."
Viserys scrambled back to his feet.
"When I come into my kingdom, you will rue this day, slut."
He walked off, holding his torn face, leaving her gifts behind him. Drops of his blood had spattered the beautiful sand-silk cloak. Danny clutched the soft cloth to her cheek and sat cross-legged on her sleeping mats.
"Your supper is ready, Khaleesi," Jiqui announced.
"I'm not hungry," Danny said sadly. She was suddenly very tired. "Share the food among yourselves and send some to Ser Jorah, if you would." After a moment she added, "Please bring me one of the dragon's eggs." Eire fetched the egg with a deep green shell, bronze flecks shining amid its scales as she turned it in her small hands. Danny curled up on her side, pulling the sand-silk cloak across her and cradling the egg in the hollow between her swollen belly and small, tender breasts. She liked to hold them. They were so beautiful, and sometimes just being close to them made her feel stronger, braver, as if somehow she were drawing strength from the stone dragons locked inside. She was lying there, holding the egg, when she felt the child move within her, as if he were reaching out, brother to brother, blood to blood.
"You are the dragon," Danny whispered to him, "the true dragon. I know it. I know it."
And she smiled and went to sleep, dreaming of home.
Bran. A light snow was falling. Bran could feel the flakes on his face melting as they touched his skin like the gentlest of rains. He sat straight atop his horse, watching as the iron portcullis was winched upward. Try as he might to keep calm, his heart was fluttering in his chest.
"Are you ready?"
Rob asked.
Bran nodded, trying not to let his fear show. He had not been outside Winterfell since his fall, but he was determined to ride out as proud as any knight.
"Let's ride, then."
Rob put his heels into his big, grey-and-white gelding, and the horse walked under the portcullis.
"Go,"
Bran whispered to his own horse. He touched her neck lightly, and the small chestnut filly started forward. Bran had named her Dancer. She was 2 years old, and Joseph had said she was smarter than any horse had a right to be. They had trained her special to respond to rein and voice and touch. Up to now, Bran had only ridden her around the yard. At first, Joseph or Hodor would lead her, while Bran sat strapped to her back in the oversized saddle the imp had drawn up for him. But for the past fortnight, he had been riding her on his own, trotting her round and round and growing bolder with every circuit. They passed beneath the gatehouse, over the drawbridge, through the outer walls. Summer and Grey Wind came loping beside them, sniffing at the wind. Close behind came Theon Greyjoy, with his long bow and a quiver of broadheads. He had a mind to take a deer, he had told them. He was followed by four guardsmen in mail shirts and coifs, and Joseph, a stick-thin stableman, whom Rob had named Master of Horse while Holland was away. Maester Lewin brought up the rear, riding on a donkey. Bran would have liked it better if he and Rob had gone off alone, just the two of them, but Hal Mollen would not hear of it, and Maester Lewin backed him. If Bran fell off his horse or injured himself, the maester was determined to be with him. Beyond the castle lay the market square, its wooden stalls deserted now. They rode down the muddy streets of the village, past rows of small, neat houses of log and undressed stone. Less than one in five were occupied, thin tendrils of wood smoke curling up from their chimneys. The rest would fill up one by one as it grew colder. When the snow fell and the ice winds howled down out of the north, old Nan said, farmers left their frozen fields and distant holdfasts, loaded up their wagons, and then the winter town came alive. Bran had never seen it happen, but Maester Lewin said the day was looming closer. The end of the long summer was near at hand. Winter is coming. A few villagers eyed the dire wolves anxiously as the riders went past, and one man dropped the wood he was carrying as he shrank away in fear, but most of the town folk had grown used to the sight. They bent the knee when they saw the boys, and Rob greeted each of them with a lordly nod. With his legs unable to grip, the swaying motion of the horse made Bran feel unsteady at first, but the huge saddle, with its thick horn and high back, cradled him comfortably, and the straps around his chest and thighs would not allow him to fall. After a time, the rhythm began to feel almost natural. His anxiety faded,
and a tremulous smile crept across his face. Two serving wenches stood beneath the sign of the Smoking Log, the local alehouse. When Theon Greyjoy called out to them, the younger girl turned red and covered her face. Theon spurred his mount to move up beside Rob.
"Sweet Kyra," he said with a laugh. "She squirms like a weasel in bed. But say a word to her on the street and she blushes pink as a maid. Did I ever tell you about the night that she and Bessa—"
"Not where my brother can hear, Theon," Rob warned him with a glance at Bran. Bran looked away and pretended not to have heard, but he could feel Greyjoy's eyes on him. No doubt he was smiling. He smiled a lot, as if the world were a secret joke that only he was clever enough to understand. Rob seemed to admire Theon and enjoyed his company, but Bran had never warmed to his father's ward. Rob rode closer. "You're doing well, Bran." "I want to go faster," Bran said. Rob smiled. "As you will." He sent his gelding into a trot. The wolves raced after him. Bran snapped the reins sharply, and Dancer picked up her pace. He heard a shout from Theon Greyjoy and the hoofbeats of the other horses behind him. Bran's cloak billowed out, rippling in the wind, and the snow seemed to rush at his face. Rob was well ahead, glancing back over his shoulder from time to time to make sure Bran and the others were following. He snapped the reins again. Smooth as silk, Dancer slid into a gallop. The distance closed. By the time he caught Rob, on the edge of the Wolf's Wood, 2 miles beyond the winter town, they had left the others well behind. "I can ride!" Bran shouted, grinning. It felt almost as good as flying.
"I'd race you, but I fear you'd win."
Rob's tone was light and joking, yet Bran could tell that something was troubling his brother underneath the smile. "I don't want to race." Bran looked around for the direwolves. Both had vanished into the wood. "Did you hear Summer howling last night?" "Grey Wind was restless too," Rob said. His auburn hair had grown shaggy and unkempt, and a reddish stubble covered his jaw, making him look older than his 15 years. "Sometimes I think they know things. Sense things," Rob sighed. "I never know how much to tell you, Bran. I wish you were older." "I'm 8 now," Bran said. 8 isn't so much younger than 15, and I'm the heir to Winterfell after you."
"So you are," Rob sounded sad, and even a little scared.
"Bran, I need to tell you something. There was a bird last night, from King's Landing. Maester Lewin woke me." Bran felt a sudden dread. "Dark wings, dark words," old Nan always said. And of late, the messenger ravens had been proving the truth of that proverb. When Rob wrote to the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, the bird that came back brought word that Uncle Benjen was still missing. Then a message had arrived from the Eyrie for Mother, but that had not been good news either. She did not say when she meant to return, only that she had taken the imp as prisoner. Bran had sort of liked the little man, yet the name Lannister sent cold fingers creeping up his spine. There was something about the Lannisters, something he ought to remember, but when he tried to think what, he felt dizzy, and his stomach clenched hard as a stone. Rob spent most of that day locked behind closed doors, with Maester Lewin, Theon Greyjoy, and Halas Mollen. Afterwards, riders were sent out on fast horses, carrying Rob's commands throughout the north. Bran heard talk of Moat Cailin, the ancient stronghold the first men had built at the top of the neck. No one ever told him what was happening, yet he knew it was not good. And now another raven, another message. Bran clung to hope. Was a bird from Mother? Is she coming home? The message was from Alan in King's Landing. Jorah Cassel is dead, and Will, and Heward as well, murdered by the Kingslayer. Rob lifted his face to the snow, and the flakes melted on his cheeks. May the gods give them rest. Bran did not know what to say. He felt as if he'd been punched. Jory had been captain of the household guard at Winterfell since before Bran was born.
They killed Jory?
He remembered all the times Jory had chased him over the roofs. He could picture him striding across the yard in mail and plate, or sitting at his accustomed place on the bench in the great hall, joking as he ate. Why would anyone kill Jory? Rob shook his head numbly, the pain plain in his eyes.
I don't know, and, Bran, that's not the worst of it. Father was caught beneath a falling horse in the fight. Alan says his leg was shattered, and Maester Pycelle has given him the milk of the poppy, but they aren't sure when he... The sound of hoofbeats made him glance down the road to where Theon and the others were coming up. When he will wake, Rob finished. He laid his hand on the pommel of his sword then, and he went on in the solemn voice of Rob the Lord. Bran, I promise you, whatever may happen, I will not let this be forgotten. Something in his tone made Bran feel even more fearful. What will you do? He asked as Theon Greyjoy reined in beside them.
Theon thinks I should call the banners, Rob said. Blood for blood. For once Greyjoy did not smile. His lean, dark face had a hungry look to it, and black hair fell down across his eyes.
Only the Lord can call the banners, Bran said, as the snow drifted down on them.
If your father dies, Theon said, Rob will be Lord of Winterfell.
He won't die,
Bran screamed at him. Rob took his hand. He won't die, not father, he said calmly. Still, the honor of the North is in my hands now. When our Lord Father took his leave of us, he told me to be strong for you and for Rickon. I'm almost a man grown, Bran.
Bran shivered.
I wish Mother was back, he said miserably. He looked around for Maester Lewin. His donkey was visible in the far distance, trotting over a rise. Does Maester Lewin say to call the banners, too?
The Maester is as timid as an old woman, said Theon.
Father always listened to his counsel, Bran reminded his brother. Mother, too.
I listened to him, Rob said. I listened to everyone.
The joy Bran had felt at the ride was gone, melted away like the snowflakes on his face. Not so long ago, the thought of Rob calling the banners and riding off to war would have filled him with excitement, but now he felt only dread.
"Can we go back now?" he said. "I'm cold."
Rob glanced around. "We need to find the wolves. Can you stand to go a bit longer?"
"I can go as long as you can."
Maester Lewin had warned him to keep the ride short for fear of saddle sores, but Bran would not admit to weakness in front of his brother. He was sick of the way everyone was always fussing over him and asking how he was.
"Let's hunt down the hunters, then," Rob said.
Side by side, they urged their mounts off the King's Road and struck out into the Wolf's Wood. Theon dropped back and followed well behind, talking and joking with the guardsmen. It was nice under the trees. Bran kept Dancer to a walk, holding the reins lightly, and looking all around him as they went. He knew this wood, but he had been so long confined to Winterfell that he felt as though he were seeing it for the first time. The smells filled his nostrils, the sharp, fresh tang of pine needles, the earthy odor of wet, rotting leaves, the hint of animal musk and distant cooking fires. He caught a glimpse of a black squirrel moving through the snow-covered branches of an oak, and paused to study the silvery web of an emperor spider. Theon and the others fell farther and farther behind until Bran could no longer hear their voices. From ahead came the faint sound of rushing water. It grew louder until they reached the stream. Tears stung his eyes.
"Bran?" Rob asked. "What's wrong?"
Bran shook his head.
"I was just remembering," he said. "Jory brought us here once to fish for trout. You and me and John, do you remember?"
"I remember," Rob said, his voice quiet and sad.
"I didn't catch anything," Bran said,
but John gave me his fish on the way back to Winterfell. Will we ever see John again?
We saw Uncle Benjen when the king came to visit, Rob pointed out. John will visit too, you'll see.
The stream was running high and fast. Rob dismounted and led his gelding across the ford. In the deepest part of the crossing, the water came up to mid-thigh. He tied his horse to a tree on the far side and waded back across for Bran and Dancer. The current foamed around rock and root, and Bran could feel the spray on his face as Rob led him over. It made him smile. For a moment he felt strong again and whole. He looked up at the trees and dreamed of climbing them, right up to the very top, with the whole forest spread out beneath him. They were on the far side when they heard the howl, a long, rising wail that moved through the trees like a cold wind. Bran raised his head to listen.
"Summer," he said.
No sooner had he spoken than a second voice joined the first.
"They've made a kill," Rob said as he remounted. "I'd best go and bring them back. Wait here. Theon and the others should be along shortly."
"I want to go with you," Bran said.
"I'll find them faster by myself." Rob spurred his gelding and vanished into the trees.
Once he was gone, the woods seemed to close in around Bran. The snow was falling more heavily now. Where it touched the ground, it melted. But all about him, rock and root and branch wore a thin blanket of white. As he waited, he was conscious of how uncomfortable he felt. He could not feel his legs, hanging useless in the stirrups, but the strap around his chest was tight and chafing, and the melting snow had soaked through his gloves to chill his hands. He wondered what was keeping Theon and Maester Luin and Joseph and the rest. When he heard the rustle of leaves, Bran used his rein to make Dancer turn, expecting to see his friends, but the ragged men who stepped out onto the bank of the stream were strangers.
"Good day to you," he said nervously. One look, and Bran knew they were neither foresters nor farmers. He was suddenly conscious of how richly he was dressed. His surcoat was new, dark grey wool with silver buttons, and a heavy silver pin fastened his fur-trimmed cloak at the shoulders. His boots and gloves were lined with fur as well.
"All alone, are you?" said the biggest of them, a bald man with a raw, wind-burnt face. "Lost in the wolf's wood, poor lad."
"I'm not lost." Bran did not like the way the strangers were looking at him. He counted four, but when he turned his head, he saw two others behind him.
"My brother rode off just a moment ago, and my guard will be here shortly."
"Your guard, is it?" a second man said. Grey stubble covered his gaunt face.
"And what will they be guarding, my little lord? Is that a silver pin I see on your cloak?"
"Pretty," said a woman's voice. She scarcely looked like a woman, tall and lean, with the same hard face as the others, her hair hidden beneath a bowl-shaped half-helm. The spear she held was 8 feet of black oak, tipped in rusted steel.
"Let's have a look," said the big bald man.
Bran watched him anxiously. The man's clothes were filthy, fallen almost to pieces, patched here with brown, and here with blue, and there with a dark green, and faded everywhere to grey. But once the cloak might have been black. The grey stubbly man wore black rags, too, he saw with a sudden start. Suddenly Bran remembered the oath-breaker his father had beheaded. The day they had found the wolf pups, that man had worn black as well, and father said he had been a deserter from the night's watch. "No man is more dangerous," he remembered Lord Eddard saying. "The deserter knows his life is forfeit if he is taken, so he will not flinch from any crime, no matter how vile or cruel."
"The pin, lad," the big man said. He held out his hand. "We'll take the horse, too," said another of them, a woman shorter than Rob, with a broad, flat face and lank yellow hair. "Get down and be quick about it."
A knife slid from her sleeve into her hand, its edge jagged as a saw.
No, Bran blurted, I can't.
The big man grabbed his reins before Bran could think to wheel Dance around and gallop off.
You can, Lordling, and will, if you know what's good for you. Steve, look how he's strapped on, the tall woman pointed with her spear. Might be it's the truth he's telling.
Straps, is it? Steve said. He drew a dagger from a sheath at his belt.
There's ways to deal with straps. You some kind of cripple?
Asked the short woman. Bran flared. I'm Brandon Stark of Winterfell, and you'd better let go of my horse, or I'll see you all dead. The gaunt man, with a grey, stubbled face, laughed.
The boy is a Stark, true enough. Only a Stark would be fool enough to threaten where smarter men would beg. Cut his little cock off and stuff it in his mouth, suggested the short woman. That should shut him up. You're as stupid as you are ugly, Harley, said the tall woman. The boy's worth nothing dead but alive. Gods be damned, think what Mance would give to have Benjen Stark's own blood to hostage.
Mance be damned, the big man cursed. You want to go back there, Usher? More fool you. Think the White Walkers would care if you have a hostage? He turned back to Bran and slashed at the strap around his thigh. The leather parted with a sigh. The stroke had been quick and careless, biting deep. Looking down, Bran glimpsed pale flesh where the wool of his legging had parted. Then the blood began to flow. He watched the red stain spread, feeling light-headed, curiously apart. There'd been no pain, not even a hint of feeling. The big man grunted in surprise.
Put down your steel now, and I promise you, you shall have a quick and painless death,
Rob called out. Bran looked up in desperate hope, and there he was. The strength of his words were undercut by the way his voice cracked with strain. He was mounted, the bloody carcass of an elk slung across the back of his horse, his sword in a gloved hand. The brother, said the man with a grey, stubbly face.
He's a fierce one, mocked the short woman. Harley, they called her. You mean to fight us, boy? Don't be a fool, lad. You're one against six.
The tall woman, Usher, levelled her spear.
Off the horse, and throw down the sword. We'll thank you kindly for the mount and for the venison, and you and your brother can be on your way.
Rob whistled. They heard the faint sound of soft feet on wet leaves. The undergrowth parted, low-hanging branches giving up their accumulation of snow, and grey wind and summer emerged from the green. Summer sniffed the air and growled.
Wolves, gasped Harley.
Dire wolves, Bran said. Still half-grown, they were as large as any wolf he had ever seen. But the differences were easy to spot if you knew what to look for. Maester Lewin and Farlan, the kennel master, had taught him. A dire wolf had a bigger head and longer legs in proportion to its body, and its snout and jaw were markedly leaner and more pronounced. There was something gaunt and terrible about them as they stood there amid the gently falling snow. Fresh blood spotted Grey Wind's muzzle.
Dogs, the big bald man said contemptuously. Yet I'm told there's nothing like a wolfskin cloak to warm a man by night.
He made a sharp gesture.
Take them!
Rob shouted, Winterfell! And kicked his horse. The gelding plunged down the bank as the ragged men closed. A man with an axe rushed in, shouting and heedless. Rob's sword caught him full in the face with a sickening crunch and a spray of bright blood. The man with the gaunt, stubbly face made a grab for the reins, and for half a second he had them, and then Grey Wind was on him, bearing him down. He fell back into the stream with a splash and a shout, flailing wildly with his knife as his head went under. The direwolf plunged in after him, and the white water turned red where they had vanished. Rob and Usher matched blows in midstream. Her long spear was a steel-headed serpent, flashing out at his chest, once, twice, three times. But Rob parried every thrust with his longsword, turning the point aside. On the fourth or fifth thrust, the tall woman overextended herself and lost her balance, just for a second. Rob charged, riding her down. A few feet away, Summer darted in and snapped at Harley. The knife bit at his flank. Summer slid away, snarling, and came rushing in again. This time his jaws closed around her calf. Holding the knife with both hands, the small woman stabbed down, but the direwolf seemed to sense the blade coming. He pulled free for an instant, his mouth full of leather and cloth and bloody flesh. When Harley stumbled and fell, he came at her again, slamming her backward, teeth tearing at her belly. The sixth man ran from the carnage, but not far. As he went scrambling up the far side of the bank, grey wind emerged from the stream, dripping wet. He shook the water off and bounded after the running man, hamstringing him with a single snap of his teeth, and going for the throat as the screaming man slid back down toward the water. And then there was no one left but the big man, Stiv. He slashed at Bran's chest strap, grabbed his arm, and yanked. Suddenly Bran was falling. He sprawled on the ground, his legs tangled under him, one foot in the stream. He could not feel the cold of the water, but he felt the steel when Stiv pressed his dagger to his throat. "Back away," the man warned, "or I'll open the boy's windpipe, I swear it." Rob reined his horse in, breathing hard. The fury went out of his eyes, and his sword arm dropped. In that moment, Bran saw everything. Summer was savaging Harley, pulling glistening blue snakes from her belly. Her eyes were wide and staring. Bran could not tell whether she was alive or dead. The grey stubbly man and the one with the axe lay unmoving. But Usher was on her knees, crawling towards her fallen spear. Grey wind padded toward her, dripping wet. "Call him off," the big man shouted. "Call them both off, or the crippled boy dies now." "Grey wind, Summer, to me," Rob said. The direwolf stopped, turned their heads. Grey wind loped back to Rob. Summer stayed where he was, his eyes on Bran, and the man beside him. He growled. His muzzle was wet and red, but his eyes burned. Usher used the butt end of her spear to lever herself back to her feet. Blood leaked from a wound on the upper arm where Rob had cut her. Bran could see sweat trickling down the big man's face. Stiv was as scared as he was, he realized. "Starks," the man muttered. "Bloody Starks." He raised his voice. "Usher, kill the wolves and get his sword."
"Kill them yourself," she replied. "I'll not be getting near those monsters."
For a moment, Stiv was at a loss. His hand trembled. Bran felt a trickle of blood where the knife pressed against his neck. The stench of the man filled his nose. He smelled of fear.
"You," he called out to Rob, "you have a name?"
"I'm Rob Stark, the heir to Winterfell."
"This is your brother?"
"Yes."
"You want him alive? Do what I say. Off the horse."
Rob hesitated a moment, then slowly and deliberately he dismounted and stood with his sword in hand.
"Now, kill the wolves."
Rob did not move.
"You do it. The wolves or the boy?"
"No,"
Bran screamed. If Rob did as they asked, Stiv would kill them both anyway, once the direwolves were dead. The bald man took hold of his hair with his free hand and twisted it cruelly till Bran sobbed in pain.
"You shut your mouth, cripple, you hear me?"
He twisted harder.
"You hear me?"
A low thrum came from the woods behind them. Stiv gave a choked gasp as a half foot of razor-tipped broadhead suddenly exploded out of his chest. The arrow was bright red, as if it had been painted in blood. The dagger fell away from Bran's throat. The big man swayed and collapsed, face down in the stream. The arrow broke beneath him. Bran watched his life go swirling off in the water. Usher glanced around as Father's guardsman appeared from beneath the trees, steel in hand. She threw down her spear.
"Mercy, my lord," she called to Rob.
The guardsmen had a strange, pale look to their faces as they took in the scene of slaughter. They eyed the wolves uncertainly, and when Summer returned to Harley's corpse to feed, Joseph dropped the knife and scrambled for the bush, heaving. Even Maester Lewin seemed shocked as he stepped from behind a tree, but only for an instant. Then he shook his head and waded across the stream to Bran's side.
"Are you hurt?"
"He cut my leg," Bran said, "but I couldn't feel it." As the maester knelt to examine the wound, Bran turned his head. Theon Greyjoy stood beside a sentinel tree. His bow in hand, he was smiling, ever smiling. A half-dozen arrows were thrust into the soft ground at his feet, but it had taken only one. "A dead enemy is a thing of beauty," he announced. "John always said you were an ass, Greyjoy," Rob said loudly. "I ought to chain you up in the yard and let Bran take a few practice shots at you. You should be thanking me for saving your brother's life." "What if you had missed the shot?" Rob said. "What if you'd only wounded him? What if you'd made his hand jump, or hit Bran instead? For all you knew, the man might have been wearing a breastplate. All you could see was the back of his cloak. What would have happened to my brother then?" "Did you ever think of that, Greyjoy?" Theon's smile was gone. He gave a sullen shrug and began to pull his arrows from the ground, one by one. Rob glared at his guardsmen. "Where were you?" he demanded of them. "I was sure you were close behind us." The men traded unhappy glances.
"We were following, my lord," said Quint, the youngest of them, his beard a soft brown fuzz. "Only first we waited for Maester Lewin and his ass, begging your pardons, and then, well, as it were—" He glanced over at Theon and quickly looked away abashed.
"I spied a turkey," Theon said, annoyed by the question. "How was I to know that you'd leave the boy alone?" Rob turned his head to look at Theon once more. Bran had never seen him so angry, yet he said nothing. Finally, he knelt beside Maester Lewin. "How badly is my brother wounded?"
"No more than a scratch," the maester said. He wet a cloth in a stream to clean the cut. "Two of them wear the black," he told Rob as he worked.
Rob glanced over at where Stiv lay sprawled in the stream, his ragged black cloak moving fitfully as the rushing waters tugged at it. "Deserters from the Night's Watch," he said grimly. "They must have been fools to come so close to Winterfell."
"Folly and desperation are oft-times hard to tell apart," said Maester Lewin. "Shall we bury them, my lord?" said Quint.
"They would not have buried us," Rob said. "Hack off their heads. We'll send them back to the wall. Leave the rest for the carrion crows."
"And this one?" Quint jerked a thumb towards Usher.
Rob walked over to her. She was a head taller than he was, but she dropped her knees at his approach.
"Give me my life, my Lord of Stark, and I am yours."
"Mine? What would I do with an oathbreaker?"
"I broke no oaths. Stiv and Wallen flew down off the wall, not me. The Black Crow's got no place for women."
Theon Greyjoy sauntered closer.
"Give her to the wolves," he urged Rob.
The woman's eyes went to what was left of Harley, and just as quickly away. She shuddered. Even the guardsmen looked queasy.
"She's a woman," Rob said.
"A wildling," Bran told him. "She said they should keep me alive so they could take me to Mance Rayder."
"Do you have a name?" Rob asked her.
"Usher, as it please the lord," she muttered sourly.
Maester Lewin stood.
"We might do well to question her."
Bran could see the relief on his brother's face.
"As you say, maester. Wayne, bind her hands. She'll come back to Winterfell with us, and live or die by the truth she gives us."
Tyrion.
You won't eat?
Maud asked, glowering. He had a plate of boiled beans in one thick, stub-fingered hand. Tyrion Lannister was starved, but he refused to let this brute see him cringe.
A leg of lamb would be pleasant, he said from the heap of soiled straw in the corner of his cell. Perhaps a dish of peas and onions, some fresh-baked bread with butter, and a flagon of mulled wine to wash it down, or beer, if that's easier. I try not to be over-particular.
"'It's beans,' Maud said. "'Here!'
He held out the plate. Tyrion sighed. The turnkey was 20 stone of gross stupidity, with rotting brown teeth and small dark eyes. The left side of his face was slick with scar, where an axe had cut off his ear and part of his cheek. He was as predictable as he was ugly. But Tyrion was hungry. He reached up for the plate. Maud jerked it out of the way, grinning.
"'It's here,'
he said, holding it beyond Tyrion's reach. The dwarf climbed stiffly to his feet, every joint aching.
"'Must we play the same fool's game with every meal?'
He made another grab for the beans. Maud shambled backwards, grinning through his rotten teeth.
"'It's here, dwarf man!'
He held the plate out at arm's length, over the edge where the cell ended and the sky began.
"'You not want eat? Here, come, take!'
Tyrion's arms were too short to reach the plate, and he was not about to step that close to the edge. All it would take would be a quick shove of Maud's heavy white belly, and he would end up a sickening red splotch on the stones of sky. Like so many other prisoners of the area over the centuries.
"'Come to think of it, I'm not hungry after all,' he declared, retreating to the corner of his cell.
Maud grunted and opened his thick fingers. The wind took the plate, flipping it over as it fell. A handful of beans sprayed back at them as the food tumbled out of sight. The turnkey laughed, his gut shaking like a bowl of pudding.' Tyrion felt a pang of rage.
"'You fucking son of a pucks-ridden ass!' he spat. "'I hope you die of a bloody flux!'
For that, Maud gave him a kick, driving a steel-toed boot hard into Tyrion's ribs on the way out.
"'I take it back!'
he gasped as he doubled over on the straw.
"'I'll kill you myself, I swear it!'
The heavy iron-bound door slammed shut. Tyrion heard the rattle of keys. For a small man, he had been cursed with a dangerously big mouth, he reflected, as he crawled back to the corner of what the Aerons laughably called their dungeon. He huddled beneath a thin blanket that was his only bedding, staring out at a blaze of empty blue sky and distant mountains that seemed to go on forever, wishing he still had the shadow-skin cloak he'd won from Marillion at dice, after the singer had stolen it off the body of the brigand chief. The skin had smelt of blood and mould, but it was warm and thick. Maud had taken it the moment he laid eyes on it. The wind tugged at his blanket with gusts sharp as talons. His cell was miserably small, even for a dwarf. Not 5 feet away, where a wall ought to have been, where a wall would be in a proper dungeon. The floor ended and the sky began. He had plenty of fresh air and sunshine, and the moon and stars by night, but Tyrion would have traded it all in an instant for the dankest, gloomiest pit in the bowels of Casterly Rock.
"'You fly,'
Maud had promised him when he'd shoved him into the cell.
20 day, 30... 50, maybe. Then you fly.
The Arryns kept the only dungeon in the realm where the prisoners were welcome to escape at will. That first day, after girding up his courage for hours, Tyrion had lain flat on his stomach and squirmed to the edge, to poke out his head and look down. Sky, was 600 feet below, with nothing between but empty air. If he craned his neck out as far as he could go, he could see other cells to his right and left and above him. He was a bee in a stone honeycomb, and someone had torn off his wings. It was cold in the cell. The wind screamed night and day, and worst of all, the floor sloped. Ever so slightly, yet it was enough. He was afraid to close his eyes, afraid that he might roll over in his sleep and wake in sudden terror as he went sliding over the edge. Small wonder the sky cells drove men mad. "God save me," some previous tenant had written on the wall in something that looked suspiciously like blood. "The blue is calling." At first Tyrion wondered who he'd been and what had become of him. Later he decided that he would rather not know. If only he had shut his mouth. The wretched boy had started it, looking down on him from a throne of carved weirwood beneath the moon and falcon banners of House Aeron. Tyrion Lannister had been looked down on all his life, but seldom by roomy-eyed six-year-olds who needed to stuff fat cushions under their cheeks to lift them to the height of a man.
"Is he the bad man?"
the boy had asked, clutching his doll. "He is," the Lady Lysa had said from the lesser throne beside him. She was all in blue, powdered and perfumed for her suitors who filled her court.
"He is so small,"
the Lord of the Aerie said, giggling. "This is Tyrion, the imp of House Lannister, who murdered your father." She raised her voice so it carried down the length of High Hall of the Aerie, ringing off the milk-white walls and the slender pillars so every man could hear it. "He slew the Hand of the King."
"Or did I kill him too?"
Tyrion had said, like a fool. That would have been a very good time to have kept his mouth closed and his head bowed. He could see that now. Seven hells, he had seen it then. The High Hall of the Aerons was long and austere, with a forbidding coldness to its walls of blue-veined white marble. But the faces around him had been colder by far. The power of Casterly Rock was far away, and there were no friends of the Lannisters in the Vale of Aeron. Submission and silence would have been his best defences. But Tyrion's mood had been too foul for sense. To his shame, he had faltered during the last leg of their day-long climb up to the Eyrie, his stunted legs unable to take him any higher. Bronn had carried him the rest of the way, and the humiliation poured oil on the flames of his anger.
"It would seem I've been a busy little fellow," he said, with a bitter sarcasm. "I wonder when I found the time to do all this slaying and murdering."
He ought to have remembered who he was dealing with. Lysa Aeron and her half-sane, weakling son had not been known at court for their love of wit, especially when it was directed at them. "Imp," Lysa said coldly, "you will guard that mucking tongue of yours and speak to my son politely, or I promise you, you will have cause to regret it. Remember where you are. This is the Aerie. And these are knights of the Vale you see around you, true men who love John Aeron well. Every one of them would die for me."
"Lady Aeron, should any harm come to me, my brother Jaime will be pleased to see that they do."
Even as he spat out the words, Tyrion knew they were folly.
"Can you fly, my Lord of Lannister?" Lady Lysa asked. "Does a dwarf have wings? If not, you would be wiser to swallow the next threat that comes to mind." "I made no threats," Tyrion said. "That was a promise."
Little Lord Robert hopped to his feet at that, so upset he dropped his doll.
"You can't hurt us," he screamed. "No one can hurt us here. Tell him, Mother, tell him he can't hurt us here."
The boy began to twitch. "The area is impregnable," Lysa Aeron declared calmly. She drew her son close, holding him safe in the circle of her plump white arms.
The imp is trying to frighten us, sweet baby. The Lannisters are all liars. No one will hurt my sweet boy. The hell of it was, she was no doubt right, having seen what it took to get here. Tyrion could well imagine how it would be for a knight trying to fight his way up in armour while stones and arrows poured down from above and enemies contested with him for every step. Nightmare did not begin to describe it. Small wonder the area had never been taken. Still, Tyrion had been unable to silence himself.
"Not impregnable," he said, "merely inconvenient."
Lord Robert pointed down, his hand trembling.
"You're a liar! Mother, I want to see him fly!"
The two guardsmen in sky-blue cloaks seized Tyrion by the arms, lifting him off the floor. The guards only know what might have happened then, were it not for Catelyn Stark. "Sister," she called out from where she stood below the thrones, "I beg you to remember this man is my prisoner. I will not have him harmed." Lysa Arryn glanced at her sister coolly for a moment, then rose and swept down on Tyrion, her long skirts trailing after her. For an instant he feared she would strike him, but instead she commanded them to release him. Her men shoved him to the floor, his legs went out from under him, and Tyrion fell. He must have made quite a sight as he struggled to his knees, only to feel his right leg spasm, sending him sprawling once more. Laughter boomed up and down the high hall of the Arryns. "My sister's little guest is too weary to stand," Lady Lysa announced. "Sir Vardis, take him down to the dungeon. A rest in one of our sky cells would do him much good." The guardsman jerked him upright. Tyrion Lannister dangled between them, kicking feebly, his face red with shame.
"I will remember this," he told them all, as they carried him off.
And so he did, for all the good it did him. At first he had consoled himself that this imprisonment could not last long. Lysa Arryn wanted to humble him, that was all. She would send for him again, and soon. If not her, then Catelyn Stark would want to question him. This time he would guard his tongue more closely. They dare not kill him out of hand. He was still a Lannister of Casterly Rock, and if they shed his blood, it would mean war. Or so he had told himself. Now he was not so certain. Perhaps his captors only meant to let him rot there, but he feared he did not have the strength to rot for long. He was growing weaker every day, and it was only a matter of time until Maud's kicks and blows did him serious harm, provided the jailer did not starve him to death first. A few more nights of cold and hunger, and the blue would start calling to him too. He wondered what was happening beyond the walls, such as they were, of his cell. Lord Tywin would surely have sent out riders when the word reached him. Jaime might be leading a host through the Mountains of the Moon even now, unless he was riding north against Winterfell instead. Did anyone outside the Vale even suspect where Catelyn Stark had taken him? He wondered what Cersei would do when she heard. The king could order him freed, but would Robert listen to his queen or his hand? Tyrion had no illusions about the king's love for his sister. If Cersei kept her wits about her, she would insist the king sit in judgment of Tyrion himself. Even Ned Stark could scarcely object to that, not without impugning the honour of the king. And Tyrion would be only too glad to take his chances in a trial. Whatever murders they might lay at his door, the Starks had no proof of anything so far as he could see. Let them make their case before the Iron Throne and the lords of the land. It would be the end of them. If only Cersei were clever enough to see that. Tyrion Lannister sighed. His sister was not without a certain low cunning, but her pride blinded her. She would see the insult in this, not the opportunity. And Jaime was even worse, rash and headstrong and quick to anger. His brother never untied a knot when he could slash it in two with his sword.
He wondered which of them had sent the footpad to silence the Stark boy, and whether they had truly conspired at the death of Lord Aaron. If the old hand had been murdered, it was deftly and subtly done. Men of his age died of sudden illness all the time. In contrast, sending some oaf with a stolen knife after Brandon Stark struck him as unbelievably clumsy. And wasn't that peculiar, come to think of it? Tyrion shivered. Now there was a nasty suspicion. Perhaps the direwolf and the lion were not the only beasts in the woods, and if that was true, someone was using him as a cat's paw. Tyrion Lannister hated being used. He would have to get out of here, and soon. His chances of overpowering Maud were small to none, and no one was about to smuggle him a 600-foot-long rope, so he would have to talk himself free. His mouth had gotten him into this cell, it could damn well get him out. Tyrion pushed himself to his feet, doing his best to ignore the slope of the floor beneath him, with its ever-so-subtle tug towards the edge. He hammered on the door with his fist. "Maud!" he shouted. "Turnkey! Maud! I want you!" He had to keep it up a good 10 minutes before he heard footsteps. Tyrion stepped back an instant before the door opened with a crash.
"Making noise!"
Maud growled, with blood in his eyes. Dangling from one meaty hand was a leather strap wide and thick, doubled over in his fist. "Never show them you're afraid," Tyrion reminded himself.
"How would you like to be rich?" he asked.
Maud hit him. He swung the strap backhand lazily, but the leather caught Tyrion high on the arm. The force of it staggered him, and the pain made him grit his teeth.
"No mouth, dwarf man," Maud warned him.
"Gold," Tyrion said, miming a smile. "Casterly Rock is full of gold. Ah!"
This time the blow was a forehand, and Maud put more of his arm into the swing, making the leather crack and jump. It caught Tyrion in the ribs and dropped him to his knees, whimpering. He forced himself to look up at the jailer.
"As rich as the Lannisters," he wheezed. "That's what they say, Maud."
Maud grunted. The strap whistled through the air and smashed Tyrion full in the face. The pain was so bad, he did not remember falling. But when he opened his eyes again, he was on the floor of his cell. His ear was ringing and his mouth was full of blood. He groped for purchase to push himself up, and his fingers brushed against nothing. Tyrion snatched his hand back as fast as if it had been scalded and tried his best to stop breathing. He had fallen right on the edge, inches from the blue.
"More to say?"
Maud held the strap between his fists and gave it a sharp pull. The snap made Tyrion jump. The turnkey laughed.
"He won't push me over," Tyrion told himself desperately as he clawed away from the edge. "Catelyn Stark wants me alive. He doesn't dare kill me."
He wiped the blood off his lips with the back of his hand, grinned and said,
"That was a stiff one, Maud."
The jailer squinted at him, trying to decide if he was being mocked.
"I could make good use of a strong man like you."
The strap flew at him, but this time Tyrion was able to cringe away from it. He took a glancing blow to the shoulder, nothing more.
"Gold!" he repeated, scrambling backward like a crab. "More gold than you'll see here in a lifetime. Enough to buy land, women, horses. You could be a lord, Lord Maud."
Tyrion hawked up a glob of blood and phlegm and spat it out into the sky.
"It's no gold," Maud said.
"He's listening," Tyrion thought. "They relieved me of my purse when they captured me, but the gold is still mine. Catelyn Stark may take a man prisoner, but she'd never stoop to rob him. That wouldn't be honorable. Help me, and all the gold is yours."
Maud's trap licked out, but it was a half-hearted, desultory swing, slow and contemptuous. Tyrion caught the leather in his hand and held it prisoned.
There will be no risk to you. All you need to do